In Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's political future is in question. Israeli voters went to the polls on Tuesday for their second major election in 5 months. Back in May, Prime Minister Netanyahu suffered a rare political defeat when, after winning his fourth consecutive election in April, his ruling Likud party wasn't able to secure enough votes to form a coalition government. And rather than give his opponents a chance to do so, he set the country on a path toward another election. But in an affront to Netanyahu's racist appeals, turnout was high among the four main Arab-Israeli political parties, known collectively as the Joint List. And while all the votes are still being counted, Netanyahu appears to be in a deadlock with former General Benny Gantz of the newly created Blue and White Party. Here to explain the implications of this vote and how the Israel-U.S. relationship could be affected is Noga Tarnopolsky, a freelance journalist based in Jerusalem. Noga, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, as always.
So, Noga, Netanyahu has called on Gantz to form a unity government between their two parties. Gantz has said during his campaign that he would not enter into a coalition with the prime minister. Where do things stand now?
Things stand at a complete impasse. Netanyahu did a series of maneuvers today. So one is he got all of the right-wing parties that in theory should be part of a narrow right-wing coalition that he all along said he wanted to form. He got all of those party heads to sign something like an oath of fealty. I have to tell you, I'm fairly astonished that any of these people did it, but they did. And of course, all of these party leaders are risking the support of their own voters because their voters voted for them and not for Netanyahu. Netanyahu may have done that for two reasons. One is to get their promise that they will only enter government with him, and the other is to weaken their position. Then he turned around almost immediately and posted a video demanding that the opposition leader, Benny Gantz, join him in a national unity government. So he basically chucked those other people out and offered this other leader to be basically his number two in a future unity government. Here's where things get really tricky, because the number one promise Gantz made, as you just mentioned, is that he would never enter a government with Netanyahu under the legal cloud he's in. Netanyahu has a hearing on October 2nd, and following which he's expected to be indicted on several very serious corruption charges. Meanwhile, the polls are still coming in. Israel has a very slow process of counting votes. We're about up to 98%. The latest in this front is that Benny Gantz stood up and said, basically, I'm going to lead whatever unity government there's going to be.
The last time we spoke was right before the elections, and there was already a feeling that Netanyahu was on shaky ground. Is it, in your assessment, you've been covering this for a while, has Netanyahu's political fortune run out, or is it petering out?
I think that this has been a devastating setback for Netanyahu, because basically what you see the voters saying is, we want a centrist government. We want a little bit of the Likud policies, which are more right-wing. We want a little bit of the blue and white parties that are more center-left. And everyone who voted knows and knew that blue and white would not join into a coalition government as long as Netanyahu is head of the Likud. There's a significant number of people who would like to see the party in a government, but think Netanyahu's time is out. And the two people saying this most vocally are leaders of the two parties who made the best gains during this election and who really are leveraged now. They're the kingmakers. One is the right-wing party, nationalist party of Avigdor Lieberman, former defense secretary who doubled his votes and who out and out is saying, we will join a government only if it's national unity with the two big parties, full stop. And then you have the Joint List, that's sort of the miracle of these elections. This is the majority Arab party in Israel, and they were attacked basically as terrorists by Netanyahu, relentlessly attacked with just openly racist incitement throughout the campaign. There was major concern that there would be low turnout among the 20% of Israeli minority who are Arabs. And in fact, the opposite happened, and these guys have surged somewhere between 13 and 15 Knesset seats. And if this unity government ends up coming to be, Ayman Odeh will become the first Arab to be the head of Israel's opposition in parliament. And that could be a very refreshing change here.
And I was just going to ask you about the joint list. I mean, more broadly, what does this election tell us about the political power of the Arab-Israeli political bloc and the ascendancy of this group? Was it purely spurred by Netanyahu's sort of taunts that they would not come out, or is there more to it?
I think there's more to it. One of the party leaders, a veteran legislator called Ahmed Tibi, has basically spent the last 2 days joking around saying that Bibi Netanyahu was their top vote-getter. And he pointed to a specific thing that Netanyahu tried to rush through parliament, a law that would have allowed his party to bring hidden cameras into Arab polling places. The law, a patently illegal law, never passed even a single committee reading in Knesset and fell. But he made this effort, and Ahmed Tibi now is cracking jokes about how Bibi's cameras have brought us all the voters. I think there's a lot more behind it. I think that Israel's Arab minority, which is a large minority, 20%, is sick of being at the sidelines. And I think also is not that much at the sidelines anymore. So while there's rampant discrimination against Arabs in Israel, you also see Arabs who direct hospitals, Arabs who direct university departments, Arabs running for office. Not all of them identify with the Arab Party. I mean, that's been clear in the votes. At least half of Arab voters don't identify with the joint list, and they want in. And Ayman Odeh, the chairman of this party, has been brilliant at convincing otherwise disaffected voters that this is their moment.
Noga, I want to talk about how this political uncertainty in Israel is going to play out in terms of U.S. Israel relations. You've been following the unexpected turn of events where Trump's outgoing envoy, Jason Greenblatt, is actually planning on meeting with Netanyahu and Gantz in Israel. What's going on here?
It's odd that Greenblatt would come to Israel in a day that is close to political chaos. It is very difficult to imagine that he thinks he will be able to achieve anything. What's assumed in Israel, in any event, is that Jason Greenblatt, as he has done before, is flying out here as a show of support for Netanyahu. Netanyahu, throughout the election, argued that Trump is about to release this secret peace deal that's been talked about for 2.5 years, but never seen, supposedly the ultimate deal between Israelis and Palestinians. And Netanyahu's argument has been all along, I'm the only one who can handle it. Basically, I'm Israel's super diplomat. And it may be that Greenblatt is flying out here in order to help Netanyahu make that argument.
On Wednesday, President Trump told reporters that the U.S.'s relationship was with Israel and that, quote, we'll see what happens. How do you interpret that? Is the president distancing himself from the prime minister while he stands on somewhat shaky ground with his political future in Israel?
Trump has been a lot less effusive towards Netanyahu since Netanyahu failed to form a government in May. So in general, we've seen a kind of cooling off of the ardor between them, at least on Trump's side. But yesterday, it really felt as if he was sort of, you know, dropping a mic because he said, no, I haven't talked to Netanyahu. It looks close, you know, whatever. We'll see. Our relationship is with Israel. So it was definitely interpreted here as a pretty harsh distancing. And then immediately, so we found out that Greenblatt is flying over here unexpectedly. The U.S. Embassy won't say what it's about. No one is really saying anything.
If this does mark the beginning of an Israel without Netanyahu at the helm, what impact would that have, or how would that affect U.S.-Israeli relations?
I think that no matter what happens, Israel has embarked on a period of political instability that has not characterized it during the last 10 years or so. First of all, it's something Israelis are going to have to get used to. And secondly, Americans are going to have to get used to it. Because the ties between the countries are so close, the United States is going to have to get accustomed to sort of return to professional ties. So talks between intel officials, you know, military peers, and less what we've seen recently, which is a relationship built on a kind of personal warmth or personal hatred, between the two top political leaders. You remember that when Barack Obama was president, the relationship with Israel seemed to be at a real low point. So I think we're going to retreat to a kind of more old-fashioned diplomacy where the professionals try and get things done.
And last question for you. Geopolitically, there's been a lot of instability in the region, particularly between Iran and Saudi Arabia and other regional players. What could this do if Netanyahu is not in power?
I actually don't think that a shift in leadership in Israel would have a major effect on that. The other potential prime minister right now is a former army chief of staff. He's someone who has had the threat from Iran in his mind. He has the implications are of Saudi Arabia in his mind. And Netanyahu talks a lot about Iran, but has never actually acted against Iran. So I would expect things to remain calm on that front.
Noga Tarnopolsky is a freelance journalist based in Jerusalem. Noga, thanks so much.
Thanks to you.